That's Ray Brown and his trio and some other extras filling out the whole complement there with something that I like called Mistreated but Undefeated Blues. It is so applicable to today's program. This is from his 2006 album, Solar Energy, Soular, Solar Energy. This is Lead Stories. I'm Mutrice Lead, and we'll be talking about a bunch of things. I mean, not give anything away. But I could start off by introducing the program by saying Vice President Mike Pence is already calling foul. It's a breach of presidential tradition. And, quote, very disappointing, unquote, Pence says that former President Barack Obama will be blasting President Donald Trump and his administration in a series of rallies to support Democratic candidates running for congressional seats in midterm elections. That's right. I mean, how dare Obama do something like that? How unpresidential. Oh, good Lord. If it weren't so funny, it would be real sad. But Obama's in the fight. At least that's what he says. And he's committed to campaigning for the next 2 months. But the question we're going to ask and deal with today is this, is it because the Republicans are strong in these contested districts that Obama will be campaigning in, or is it because the Democrats are vulnerable? Now, you want to hear my opinion? It doesn't matter much to me at all. Because the deeper we dig, the more we discover how alike the parties are. They really aren't very different. But what I started doing, and I don't want anybody to use me as an example or, follow my lead, this was just what I determined almost 20 years ago. I will not vote unless, now this is a big issue, unless there is a compelling reason for me to vote. I've said to you before, I was perhaps the nation's most the most enthusiastic voter. I would get to the polling site even before the people who are running the polling site are there. I wasn't the only one. There are a couple of stragglers like me, and we used to have a chuckle as we would meet up on voting day. And we would discover that we were way too early. And so we'd head down to a diner, which was about half a block away from the polling site. And we'll amuse ourselves with some coffee and then come back when we see evidence that the polling site is open. Okay. But from that point on, I would say several elections. I had experienced several elections. And then it dawned on me that I really have to restructure this whole thing because it's just not making sense. It's not working for me. And the final decision was made when I felt mugged, assaulted, brutally assaulted in the voting booth. I said, well, wait a minute. What is this? As a voter, I'm being asked to vote yes or no. That's all you have to do. Just vote yes or no on a project the city was contemplating. I can't recall the details now. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Described according to these people who put this together, described in exactly 5 lines of copy. That was a big proposition. And on the basis of 5 lines of copy, I was supposed to have enough information as a so-called intelligent voter to vote yes or no. That's all they wanted of me. Vote yes or no. Well, a rush of anger came over me. I said, but no, I'll calm down. I moved to the right of the ballot. And there I'm asked to select judges. But on what basis? Judges aren't allowed to campaign. We have no information about these judges. So it is understood that anybody voting for a judge in whatever court more than likely would be voting out of sheer ignorance, total ignorance. I said, well, that's it. That does it. I was mugged. I felt mugged in the voting booth, and I made the decision in the voting booth that this would never, ever, ever happen to me again. The open contempt, not only for the process, but for the person. The idea that just do what we tell you to do and get the hell out and go back home. So I said, okay, if you want to play the game like that, I will have to now change my approach so that I do not come into a voting booth as a total victim that somebody I don't know or I can't see or I have no connection to is deciding in all these different ways of manipulating my mind what I will likely be doing, how I would likely be voting in the voting booth. So that did it. That did it. So I made up my mind after that I would not be voting unless there is a compelling reason, a compelling reason for me to vote. And sadly, there hasn't been a compelling reason for me to vote. I don't feel guilty about it, by the way. Not at all. Because I am satisfied that no matter how I feel, there are people who are manipulating things in such a way that they can, by the end of the day, have a chuckle about things turning out just the way they want to. And if that constitutes voting, as the saying goes, include me out. I don't want any part of that. So this particular voting cycle has been drummed up to be the be all and end all of voting for all time. The stakes are very high, and they're telling us everything that everything except what we really need to know. On the Democratic Party side, Of course, they're pointing fingers at the Republicans and Donald Trump and how evil he is. And, things could get really, really bad, says Barack Obama. They could get real bad. So you better get in there and vote against him. Vote for us. But what does that mean? I mean, strictest terms, what exactly are the Democrats asking other than don't vote for him, but vote for us? Is that the level at which we are engaging in politics? Does that suffice as a reason when there is no reason? Don't vote for him. He's real bad news. And then we have exactly the same kind of appeal coming at us from the Republicans. Trump openly said, even to his own base, if you guys don't elect me, and if I get impeached, it's your damn fault. Mean, really, is that a rationale? Is that what we've come to? They're both plying the same trade, the trade of fear and expunging themselves right off the bat from any responsibility to actually account or explain themselves to the people. What is the rationale for voting for you and your party? I'm fed up with that. That does not appeal to me as a sensible, logical, rational reason for voting for party A or party B or party C or whoever. You got to come better than that. The truth is, they can't come better than that. They're not equipped. They have spent so many years in psychological warfare and race-based political thinking that they have basically boiled this thing down to just its elemental meaning and significance. Voting is you vote for somebody as a way of voting against somebody else. And that's what electoral politics has boiled down to. You vote for Bob because you don't want to vote for Jenny. Is that it? Really? I can live without that. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. But here's what I find fascinating is that whether you vote for Bob or you vote for Jenny, the political process itself has been hijacked. And what you are thinking or what you are inclined to think that of the political process and what it ought to do and what it ought to be couldn't be any further from the truth. We have people who have come to manage this process. They've taken it over and they've managed the process so as to have a reasonable prediction as to how things will, turn out based on the hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on campaigns and advertising and mail outs and so forth to influence your thinking. They have people who can sit down and figure out what the chances are of winning in this district or that district or the other district. And that's what is important, at least to them. Has nothing to do with issues that are important to the people. Nothing. Vote for Donald Trump. Why? To his base, they have to demonstrate that he is. He is a far more dedicated racist than the other candidates. He's more ignorant than the other candidate. These are the points that they're trying to communicate. And then we have the new generation talking about why it is important to put your money with them. It's a bet. You're taking a bet. You're making a bet. And if you're smart, you'll make a smart bet. So when Barack Obama begins, as of today, his 2-month sojourn into the world of political campaigning for the midterms, understand what he's doing. He is being put to work. He has to show loyalty to a party because it's the party apparatus that delivers the goodies for him. 2 months, that's all he's going to give now because he has been president and he's done his work and so forth. And now he's entitled to cut back a little bit and be, ceremonial. But at the same time, he'll be able to justify himself and say, look, I'm still a party man. The Democratic Party is the party of the people, has nothing to do, as you know, with the people. It is about supporting a structure carefully and scientifically designed to deliver the goods to the people who are running that system. That's it. How else could you explain in the city of New York, for example, a good old-fashioned democratic town, right? You have a democratic mayor and a democratic governor. It's a very democratic situation. And people are doing quite well. They're doing very, very well. The people who are part of this structure, who are expecting that you will follow your orders and you will go to the voting sites and cast your vote for the Democrats. Meanwhile, your child or grandchild can't get a drink of water during the school day in the school. There are people who are hungry every single day. That's not them. That's not the big guys. But your job and my job, and the same applies on the Republican side, is to come out and basically boost the chances of success for these systems that have long divorced themselves from the day-to-day struggles of people. And as long as you obey the call, you can be said to be a good and enthusiastic citizen. I'm not going for that. I'm not going for that. Barack Obama was in office for 8 years. He came into office on the strength of the popular vote and specifically of the black vote. As we examine the evidence, did Barack Obama's terms in office, the 2 terms that he served, what did it deliver? We know about the attempt to get the Affordable Care Act done, but it wasn't done. And it wasn't created. It was not created for the people. It was created for the health care system, the profit-making health care system. It was rammed through in the dead of night when practically nobody was around. And boom, the news next day was, we've got an Affordable Care Act. This was a piece of legislation concocted by Hillary Clinton principally in consultation with the people who were to make hundreds of millions or billions of dollars through this program. And she gave it to Obama and said, here, take this and get this done. Have it passed in Congress. And that's what he did. This was not his re legislation. And they kicked this thing around like a football, and they did everything possible to persuade people. This is for you. We're doing this for you because we love you, and because this is in the tradition of the Democratic Party to look out for the least of these. It's hogwash. It was a bill selected with selected participation from people in the industry who stood to make hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. It doesn't improve. Has it improved the health care available to people? No. And they're still trying to tell us that the Affordable Care Act is a landmark piece of legislation, which it's not. It's a landmark piece of lobbying, a landmark piece of closed door negotiations with the people's vote legitimizing this bogus arrangement. That's what it is. You show me where across the board the Affordable Care Act has eradicated so many barriers to quality available health care for the people. No such thing. And it isn't just confined to the Democrats. This is going on all over the place. The Republicans are doing it. Even the progressives are in on the act of, shysting. That's the only thing I could think of. Make you believe that they are doing something truly in the interest of the people. And now you're coming close to election time, and you're hearing the politics of fear. Don't vote for that group over there. They're really bad people, and things are going to get exponentially worse than they are now. Vote for us over here because we know what we're doing. I ask you. from the time that Barack Obama took office to now, have the Democrats actually demonstrated leadership on matters that are pivotal to the day-to-day survival of the masses of people? I'm talking about serious life and death issues, like housing, like criminal justice reform, prison reform, like education, like employment. These are basics. Can we say that the lot of the people who invested so heavily with the Democratic Party and its so-called ideals, that it has improved, measurably improved? No. By the time the people who really were into making money were finished with that cycle of the elections, the Democratic Party had no money, and the so-called objectives that it had were not achieved. And then they come back again, and they tell the same people who were just so badly, brutally beaten, we are insisting you have to come out and vote. Except nobody could prove the logic of it. Why should people continue to vote for this party and its representatives? Their children are not getting a better education. They're not constantly employed. They do not have adequate housing. They're the ones getting arrested in disproportionate numbers. They do not have adequate health care. But time and time again, come out and vote. And everybody is clear who they're talking to. They're talking to the mules who are dragging this cart. But the cart is delivering goodies to other folks who aren't really concerned about dragging this cart. The Republicans, well, we see what has happened, a dramatic deterioration in standards, if you could call it that. The Republican Party used to stand for something. But look what we have. Donald Trump. What do you do? How do you go forward with a Donald Trump who himself could barely read a document or barely has the patience to acquaint himself with policy issues, who clearly has a prejudicial attitude toward the business of delivering goods and services to the people? He defines the people very differently. A whole lot of us are not the people, as far as he's concerned. So it brings you back to the question of, what is voting about? What are we voting for? Why are we supposed to get so excited about the midterm elections and Barack Obama is hitting the road for a whole 2 months? Imagine that. And we are in the middle of a drought We have political parties that aren't caring at all about the people. Everybody is fighting for the chance to put their hands in the till. Everybody is functioning now at maximum thievery quotient. The big thieves are at the top, and the stragglers come after that. I'm supposed to get excited about this? I have no input where I want input, where I expect input. I'm locked out. They'll take it from there. You just come in like a total victim and press that lever or select that button and go home. We'll take it from there. You don't have the capacity to understand how complex this is. And frankly speaking, this is what politics is all about. You're not elected to make any decisions, but those folks are. And you find out immediately after the election how powerless you really are, but how you have enabled the powerful who have no interest at all in your situation. I will not support that. Now, on the other hand, as I've said, I am willing still to keep an open mind. I can't wait for the opportunity to support a party and a candidate that really understands this whole idea of civic involvement and voting and what it could do. Instead, everybody is functioning on useless, outdated patterns that have greed at the top and exclusivity. They have a club, the Thievery Club. In fact, one of my favorite bands is a band out of DC called the Thievery Corporation. But this is what they have made it to be, about thievery. I can't support that. I just can't. And yet I am hopeful and praying that somewhere we can see a glimmer of hope. Perhaps it is in the fact that so-called progressives are being elected now. Perhaps it's in the fact that a new generation has come along that sees the futility of old-style politics. That is, it's taking us nowhere. It's benefiting only a small group of people who assure themselves almost eternal returns, because they situate themselves within the structure as people who would always have some kind of say over policy making, and that in turn is worth something, so they'll get paid for it. Frankly, I think it is one of the greatest tragedies of American politics. It is not unique, certainly, in the world. All over the world, we see examples of politicians and political parties and other operatives fleecing the people, fleecing the resources of the land, and telling the folks that they're doing these things in the name of the country and the people in it. Well, we are members, our country is perhaps one of the leading members of that circle. And at some point, we have to make a decision. Is this what you're going to sign up for as a quote, citizen voter? Is this what it means to be part of the democratic, small d, democratic process? Is this what we are supposed to expect as the highest possible level at which our representatives could function? No. I say no. For me, no. So I'm looking for an opportunity where I feel reasonably assured that A, I won't be insulted as a citizen voter and lied to and manipulated. And two, that there really is a genuine effort here to do the right thing by the people. I do not intend to lend any energy at all to the status quo. It will not receive any more support from me. I just can't t I can't deal with it. And I think we need to understand that this whole game of, well, the Republicans and the Democrats, get out of that stuff. They're all the same. There's very little in terms of a distinguishing difference between the two. And let's pursue, even if we start out small, let's pursue efforts that really address the burning issues that we have suffered as going unaddressed for so long. But let's send a signal, most importantly, to this system that it's time, it's up. It's up. We can't deal with this crap anymore. We'll take a little break here and come back to your thoughts and your opinions right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about time to end the charade, even if it happens one by one, to come to terms with the fact that we have been used, and that's what they intend our permanent role to be in this thing called politics. Politics is not a friend of the average person here. Politics looks upon us as patsies. We could get these people to do anything we want them to do. And then, after that, we go quietly into a room and fix the situation the way we want it. Patricia from New York, how are you? You get us started today.
Hi, good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope all is well, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. To you too.
Approximately maybe 3, 4 weeks ago, one of the New York senators, Kirsten Gillibrand, held a town hall here in New York up at Riverside Church, and I attended. Now, the hall where the community, where the town hall was held, there were approximately, I would say, maybe 300 people, 350. And, of course, for those people who are outside of New York and are not familiar with Riverside Church is one of those historic, is one of the historic churches, a very activist church in New York City, and they host a lot of community events. And this particular location in the church holds about maybe 500 people. So there, it was almost at capacity. And there were only maybe a handful of people of color at this town hall. So what they did was, if you wanted to ask a question, you had to put your name in a lottery, and then they would pull out a name, and hopefully your name would be pulled. And as luck would have it, my name was the last one to be pulled. And so there had been previous to me about 8 individuals who had asked questions. So I was the last one. And not one person before me asked anything about communities of color. So I went up to Kirsten Gillibrand, and I said to her, the Democratic Party seems to have an agenda for every group, you know, marriage equality, LGBT, immigration, women's, you know, reproductive rights. I said, but I don't hear anything about people of color. And I said, you know, all children, we're right now the focus is on immigrant children coming from Latin America, coming from Central America. I said, but, you know, there are children in Detroit that don't have clean drinking water. There are children who are being abused by the police. I don't hear any attention being given to them. And I said, those children are equally important. So I want to know, what's your agenda? So I posed that question to her. This was her response, that she believed that the number one issue was the economy. And that after that, she felt it was important to have stricter gun laws, and she went on and on and on, but she never answered my question. So at the end of the town hall, I went up to her, and I said to her, for me, the number one issue that I have, because we're talking about whether I live on this earth or I am 6 feet under, is the issue of police brutality and the issue of killing of black people by the police, and the fact that these people go are not held accountable. And I said, the economy is important, but I don't need money and I don't need a job if I'm 6 feet under. And I may not recover if a family member who I love dearly is 6 feet under. So, yes, these other issues are important, but the number one issue that's important to me is my life and the life of people that I care about. And so, I share this because people really do believe that these individuals have their best interests at heart, and they don't have a clue about who we are. They don't have a clue about what we care about. There is a platform, and that's the platform. And hopefully you fit into the platform. And that's my contribution for today.
Thank you. Quite a contribution, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Patricia, for your call. 888-874-4888. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Yeah, good day, you three.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm hanging.
Yeah, great. Persevere. Don't hang. Persevere.
Okay, I'm persevering.
Let me say this. On paper, I have a political solution, which it would take a little time to actually explain. Right now, I couldn't. One day, if I had like about 15 minutes to 20 minutes, maybe half an hour, I could actually articulate it. And it's something I've been thinking about since I was about 18 years of age. Oh, because I've been interested in politics since I was a boy. The answer to the political situation is very simple. It's just like driving. When you first, and give me, humor me for a second, because I know you think I'd like to philosophize, but in my philosophy, it's actually concrete. Driving, it seems you get nervous. Wow. And you're scared, but after you learn to drive, you realize that it is so simple. And the answer to everything in life is simple. but it's how we approach it. One of the biggest problems is that we all, excluding none, are suffering from miseducation, and we treat politics the same way we treat religion. Religion might not be a true ism, but we have come to accept it as a true ism. The same way we treat economics, because I hear people talk about economics, and I don't care. You could have 10 PhD in economics. Economics is bogus because money is not really real. Economics is a false mathematical construct, and we pretend that it's great, et cetera, but it's not. It's actually a falsehood, and it's just like a falsehood of many religions. And you come to embrace a religion, even though it's a lie, just like the Catholic Church or the Pope, we bow down to this old, but it's a ridiculous thing, and we continue to do this. Simply put, the people are all like parts of the body, a soldier, a police. We all need to be re-educated to function just like the ant community, where we all work for the good of the people. And government should be designed specifically just for the management of the people, the organization of the people. We should make it so that politicians shouldn't have big houses. They shouldn't have big money. Nothing, everything about the job should be designed that it attracts only those who are interested in the people. And the people should have the power to put them in office and remove them and treat them like, okay, we really hire them.
They've always had this power. Why is it that the people continue to elect representatives and systems that aren't doing very much for them?
Because we treat them the same way we treat preachers. The preacher will come and he will lie to you, tell you he needs a $65 million plane, and because you so need to worship someone, you continue to idolize them. Treat them like you put them on a pedestal. For example, everyone is a worker in society. Like when we speak of the police and the soldiers, we say them and us. It's not them and us. A policeman is a laborer. And when police are trained, they should be trained that you are a laborer. You're no different from a factory worker. An actor, his job is acting. An engineer, his job is engineering, a carpenter, etc. And if we design society that in such a way that everyone is just contributing to the good of everyone, then we would all have a different approach. And then we need to take a new approach to money. We have to say that, for example, they tell you...
But wait a minute, Lincoln, you're veering off, and I need to keep you focused. Okay, so I got your point so far. Explain, therefore, how we interpret our current condition, divided between them, mostly between Democrats and Republicans and all of that kind of stuff. But how do you get people to understand that there ought to be an entirely different yardstick by which we measure our political system and its relevance to us?
Like you, one of the things you suggested, you said even if we start by a little, by re-educating the people, re-educating them about government and its purpose and the place it should serve. And we have to, like, for example, I see on Facebook people constantly talking about Obama, the greatest president. And you see they put Obama in spectacles and he's cool. And these are so-called progressives. I said, these bunch of idiots. They keep putting Obama the cool, Obama. What the hell does that have to do with feeding people? What does that have to do with the homeless? And then we say Trump the wicked. What about Bush, who killed a million people? We need to put things in perspective and stop selectively saying this is bad and that is good. But it comes back down to re-educating the people, giving them a new value system. Let them realize that just like religion, we have been functioning on a falsehood. And now we must jettison this falsehood and set up a new structure. And I, one of these days, I would love to come on your program and tell you the design of my thing, which I am trying to garner money so I could go back to Jamaica to use it as a, like a microcosm to show how government should really function. But I'll leave room for someone else to speak.
All right, but thank you so much for your contribution today. Very, very insightful. 888-874-4888. The point I'm making by saying all of this today to you is that it wasn't easy to do. It wasn't easy to wrench myself away from a customary way of doing things and then say, but I'm not making sense, and I'm supposed to be a reasonably, you know, intelligent person. Why am I functioning unintelligently about this? What, therefore, should the alternative be for me to be comfortable with myself? I just can't do it. I can't go down to the polling site and vote knowing what this is. I can't countenance this anymore. And again, as I said, I haven't made it a permanent decision, but I am so hopeful. I am so hopeful. There are signs, you know, the election of Alexandria Cortez in the Bronx, that's a hopeful sign. And there are others coming behind her lead, but we have to start looking deep within ourselves about whether we have been aiding and abetting a very undesirable political system. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. I wonder.
Hello.
Hi. I think most people are, David is right, they're glamorizing these people they select to represent them. I think they have to turn the tables. They turn the tables on, just like the statistics people come around to your house, and they ask your questions. I think people should put 10 things on a paper in which they want the legislators to recognize exactly what they want, exactly what they want. And so you probably don't even need representatives. You just need the opinion of every elector, and he puts down what he wants to happen in the coming year. So what do you think about that?
Well, I'm suspecting that you have a little bit more to say, so I'm listening.
Well, it's not difficult. It's not difficult. People just put down, what do I want to see the government do in the next number of years? I write down 10, whatever you want, one thing or 10 things. And what happens, just like the statistics, they come and collect this, this paper, and they put it all together with 2 million other people, and then they say, what is the most things that of these 2 million people, because there are 100 million people, I would divide it up into 50 different constituencies. So they say, what is the most that they want to do? So they look through all these papers, and they grade them, they classify them. So those 10 things that most everybody agrees about, they adopt as law. It's that simple.
Well, it could be that simple, but here's a question. the way things are structured now in terms of party, okay, party affiliation, you have all these nuances. For example, a predominantly Latino district would have a very different profile from a predominantly white working class district, even though they may be at the same economic level, but culturally the differences are so diverse as to make them two separate entities. I know people who just still don't understand why blacks... Oh, here we go. Means our time is up. We'll continue the discussion. Thank you so much, all of you who contributed today. Very meaningful indeed. Stay tuned. Keep it right here at PRN.FM, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening today.